Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Not with your bad knee yet. You shouldn't throw anybody.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Remember how in the mythical days of the last 6 months or so when companies just couldn't find anyone to work and they were shortening their hours and things because they just couldn't find anyone to work? Well, times they are a-changing. The Wall Street Journal's got an interesting article. If you've been delaying getting a job, I wouldn't delay any further. Businesses are now starting to rescind job offers. They no longer are facing this emergency of not enough people to work. Now, things are really roaring back to life. And so people who are getting job offers from various companies, this article goes into quite a few of them, these offers are being rescinded. By the way, my number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Businesses in several different industries are rescinding job offers that they made just a few months ago, a sign that the tightest labor market in decades may be showing cracks. Companies like Twitter, Redfin, Coinbase Global, Netflix, Peloton, Carvana, Uber, Meta, it's a fairly long list. They're all basically retrenching. And they're now, you know, if they sent you an offer to go work at Meta and hey, we're going to pay you $150,000 to come work here, then you get an email last week saying, well, sorry, we're not going to be able to honor that commitment. So if I were you, if you're looking for a job, check out this article, by the way, in the Wall Street Journal. Very interesting. But it would be a good time maybe to start getting one of those jobs if you can, because they're probably not going to be around that much longer. Not to mention, Cyrus, when the robot burger flippers hit all these chains. Well, that's going to start.
I'm holding out for a management position.
Why don't you be the boss of the robots? You could be the robots could be direct reporting to you.
Yeah, I wonder how long that'll last.
And you would have to talk like this if you're trying to talk to the robots?
00001 0110.
Yeah. All right. I just wanted to let you know about that. 888-914-9149. How about Ale in Woodland Hills, California? Hello, Ale.
Yes. Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I am in California, and I'm in the Woodland Hills area. It's more of the city. If you know California, it's famous for its agriculture, its mountains, oceans, etc. Uh-huh. And that being said, I wanted to move to the mountains, more of a green area, more central California where it's agriculture, very foresty, very pretty. Okay. Problem is, this one property I want to acquire for primary residence, it checks off all the boxes, nature, serene, with the exception of the name of the street, and that is Devil's Den Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Now, my question is, am I doomed for I'm not a superstitious person, but being that I am, you know, Catholic, I'm just wondering, is this going to be like a problem? Am I opening up a portal? Am I going to be destined for problems, spirituality in that regard?
I don't think so. Not at all. The term Devil's Den, you'll see that at the battlefield at Gettysburg. There's a famous section of the battlefield known as Devil's Den. It was called that from, you know, a long time before the Civil War. And all the times I have visited the battlefield and spent time in Devil's Den and hiked around and all that, it's never seemed to me like there's any problem. A lot of people died there, of course, so it's the site of terrible bloodshed. But no harm seems to come to anybody who goes there. I would take the same view of if you bought a house on a street called Devil's Den Boulevard. That's unfortunate. I mean, there could have been a much better name choice. I don't know who's in charge of such things. But I don't think that there's anything that would append to you because you have a house there, like suddenly now you're in a vortex mm-hmm. of evil spirits or anything. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of my debit cards has, as part of the number string, 666 on it. And I couldn't care less. But, you know, every time when I read it to somebody over the phone and I get to the 666 part, I often wonder if the other person is thinking, oh my gosh, is that jinxed? No. It's just happenstance, and there's no negative connotation for me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that answers my question. I appreciate it. That's very, very good.
And if you become a fine upstanding citizen of that local community, maybe you could move to have the street renamed. That happens from time to time.
Yeah, hopefully. Okay.
You know, maybe, hey, here's an angle. I'll give you an angle that you might want to try if you ever do that. Point out that Devil's Den is a place where the South killed a lot of Northern soldiers in the Civil War. And the South was fighting for what? Fighting for slavery. So if Devil's Den, although they didn't prevail in the end, they didn't prevail there, they struck many blows on behalf of the defense of slavery. So why don't we rename this from Devil's Den to something else, because it smacks of slavery? There are some people for whom that would be a compelling argument. I don't think it's a compelling argument. But there are people that might be swayed by something like that because they want to divest themselves of anything that would smack of the Confederacy. So, hey, maybe you can get it renamed to, you know, Relevant Radio Boulevard or something like that.
Okay.
So. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Ale. Appreciate it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Colleen now in Milwaukee. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning. So my question is, I own a duplex in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I was wondering, is it okay, and what do I do if it is okay, to rent my upper level to the two people I currently have? One has started transitioning to become transgender. The other one is gay. And I have a female roommate in the lower level with me who just let me know she's dating a woman. So I want to know, is it okay, because I own the duplex, to first, am I supporting, am I doing wrong in supporting, or not supporting, but housing and allowing these things under my roof? And if that's permissible, I guess, then how do I compassionately address all three people in a very Christian way?
Well, let's start there. So we want to be Christian and compassionate. We want to seek the good of the other person. Now, the first thing that comes to my mind, Colleen, is that, number one, there are laws on the books that would prevent you legally from discriminating against people simply on the basis of skin color, religion, ethnicity, and also now sexual orientation. So I think from a legal standpoint, your hands, whatever else one might think about the situation, you would be prevented by the law from doing that. So if I were you, I would look at that very closely, find out what the law specifies. But I'm almost certain that it would say that you couldn't discriminate against somebody on that basis. The view I take on this issue is that in some situations you have no choice, and therefore you are not intentionally participating in something that's beyond your control. If you would prefer to rent to people who are not, let's say, committing sin, you'd also have to say, well, what other sins could somebody be committing that I wouldn't rent to them for? So let's say a divorced and remarried couple. You know, objectively, in the eyes of the church, they're living in adultery because, let's say, that there was no process of annulment undertaken. Would you say no to them for that? What about a couple that was practicing contraception or maybe had one or the other was sterilized? So you can see where it becomes very difficult, if not impossible, to police all that. And you're not really in a position, nor does God expect you to be in a position, to police the behavior of other people. Now, if it's illegal, obviously, you have recourse there, and you should do whatever you can. If it's a counterfeiting ring that's making money, printing money on the kitchen table in your duplex, that's obviously something you could say something about. But just people who have a lifestyle that you disagree with and would say that that's immoral, I don't see where you really can do anything about that. So that's my initial thought. Obviously, we want to be compassionate to people, People need a place to stay. People need, you know, the necessities of life. We all do. But at the same time, there are inevitably going to be things that arise where you can't control what's happening there. And so you do the best you can under the circumstances. It seems to me that's the best way to go about this.
Okay. And then what is the best I can do in terms of, you know, if my roommate's girlfriend comes over, and of course I'm friendly towards them, but it is difficult to accept that they're sharing a room. And I don't know, do I say anything, or is
my
place?
No, I mean, who owns, it sounds like you're the owner of the duplex, right?
I do okay. Own it, yep.
So you do have certain rights, obviously. And again, the laws would tell you what specifically, from a legal standpoint, what your rights are. But I mean, you have the right as the owner to make certain decisions about, you know, how you want to live. So if you, let's just take it out of the realm of homosexuality. And let's say that there was some other issue, whatever it may be, that you didn't feel comfortable living in the same home with somebody who is active in some other area. You have a right to live the way you want to live. And so what you might need to do would be to wait until the lease is up and then just decline to renew it. And just say, you know, I've decided I want to live by myself for the time being. So I'm not going to renew the lease, and you'll have to look for a different place because I'm not going to renew it. You could do that. You have the right to do that.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Now, in the meantime, let's say that there's 10 months left. There are 10 months left in the lease, so it's not something that's going to happen soon. And she wants her girlfriend to come over and spend the night. You could say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. This is my home. I'm not comfortable with that, and I'm going to ask you respectfully not to do that. Now, she may say, well, I'm going to do it anyway, regardless of what you say. Well, then I think the law provides for you as a landlord. There may be some teeth in the law there that would benefit you to say, well, then you're breaching the terms of the contract. Now, I don't know what your contract looks like. I don't even know if she even signed a contract. But there are certain legal provisions you can have in a contract as a landlord that stipulate that if the renter engages in certain activities, like, you know, changing the transmission of the car on the front lawn, that would be, in many contracts, enough to get you bounced. So there are some things that you could have in there if you don't already, and that might be a way to handle it. But I think I would start with just the person-to-person approach first and just say, this makes me uncomfortable, and I don't want to have to live in my home with this here. So it's not my place to tell you what to do with yourself and your girlfriend. But if you're going to do something, can you not do it here? And I think that's reasonable. I mean, there's obviously, it's likely to involve a kind of, you know, a clash and maybe some friction. You might get the cold shoulder. These things happen. But if you wanted to start there with a heart-to-heart discussion with her and tell her why this makes you uncomfortable and you don't want her to do that, maybe that's the solution right there. And if that doesn't work, then maybe you go the route of just declining to renew the lease when the time comes up, and then you live on your own for a time. You don't have to give anyone an explanation. You have the freedom to do that.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's what I was looking for, and just making sure I'm approaching it the correct and Christian way. Definitely been a challenge. So, no, this definitely helps. Thank you.
You're welcome. And the main thing is, and I hear it in your voice, is that you want to do the right thing. You want to be compassionate. You want to be accommodating. And that's all good. We should be that way. How often, though, isn't it the case that the people on the other side are definitely not that way toward us? We bend over backward to try to make things work out, and they'll often just trample you if you disagree with their worldview. So that's unfortunate. But I do concur, if your goal is to, how can I be compassionate? How can I be thoughtful? How can I be accommodating until there's a certain point where I can't do that anymore? I think that's admirable on your part.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Colleen, thank you, and best of luck with this. Oh, and Cyrus, I know somebody's going to write me an email and saying, it has nothing to do with luck. There is no such thing as luck. This is God's providence. Well, I think people understand what I mean. Let's go to Bethany in Alpena, Michigan. Hi, Bethany.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Yes, what can I do to be of service this morning? I think Bethany's phone is giving her trouble. Bethany, if you don't mind, stand by. Somebody will pick up with you and see if we can't get your phone connection sorted out. In the meantime, we'll go to Delaney in Helena, Montana. Hi, Delaney.
Hi, how are you? Oh, sorry, I'm not supposed to ask you that. Okay.
That's okay.
I'm only 15, so maybe I just don't, like, know what's going on, but I was reading Mark last night, and I was reading about how Jesus cursed the fig tree.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, that does not seem like a very Jesus thing to do. Like, the fig tree wasn't bearing fruit for him, and he was hungry, so he cursed it, and then they came back, and it was all withered up. I was just wondering, mm-hmm. like, why did he do that, or, like, what is that trying to teach us?
Well, the fig tree, if it's the one I'm thinking of, is where he goes to find fruit. The one I'm thinking of is in Luke chapter 13, beginning of verse 7. He goes to find fruit on this tree. I'll begin in verse 6. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came seeking fruit on it and found none. And he said to the vine dresser, "Lo, these 3 years I have come seeking fruit on this fig tree, and I find none. Cut it down. Why should it use up the ground?" And he answered him, "Let it alone, sir, this year also, till I dig about it and put on manure. And if it bears fruit next year, well and good. But if not, you can cut it down." This, to my mind, is an analogy for you and for me. So you are the fig tree. And the analogy here, Jesus using a parable that the people would understand. They knew about fig trees because they cultivated trees for fruit. They knew about animals. They knew about the things that Jesus talked about that were often agricultural in nature. So here he's using an agricultural analogy to say that the fig tree, if it doesn't fulfill its purpose in being a fig tree, there's no point in having it. There's no point in keeping it because you're putting in all this labor and you're watering it and you're tending to it. And if it doesn't produce fruit, what good is it? And the analogy, I think, Delaney, is that you are like the fig tree. Jesus wants you to bear good fruit. And so the being cut down analogy has to do with going to hell. So if at the end of your life you have not produced good fruit, then you are not going to be, you're not going to go to heaven. And I think the people understood that. And this also points to the Lord's patience. You know, I'll give it time. Nothing's happening right now. Nothing has happened for the last 3 years. And for all appearances, nothing will happen, but let's give it some more time. And not that God needs to know what will happen, because he already knows what will happen. But you see how patient he is with us in the midst of our sins. He still loves us, and he's still patient with us, and he still forgives us. I think those are all aspects of this fig tree analogy.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks for listening to Relevant Radio, Delaney. I appreciate that. Let's take a break. Ah, Cyrus, you beat me to it. Yeah. If you're going to do any flying in the coming days and weeks, I've got a story I want to share with you about what some pilots are saying. I'm talking about airline pilots for big airlines, some advice that they're giving for you. I'll tell you about that when I come back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro tacos. Don't forget the rice and beans on the plato. I like to eat, homie, yo no estoy flaco. Yeah, I'm chubby, pero I'm still guapo. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Patrick Madrid is on
Taco Tuesday.
Coast to coast on Relevant Radio.
Taco Tuesday's my favorite day. That's the reason why I'm on our way.
We do it in Mexico all the time.
We do it in Mexico all the time.
That's right. Okay, so let's get to the business of flying. As you know, I've talked to you a little bit in recent weeks about pilot shortages. The airlines are being stressed and overstressed and stretched too thin. Lots of flights being canceled. Lots of flights being delayed. You're missing your connecting flight. I've been there. It's horrible. So it's just a difficult time right now. And I wanted to share a bit more information with you. This is from the New York Post. And it's insights from a pilot. So a pilot for one of the country's largest airlines for 30 years. It doesn't say which one. Doesn't give his name, obviously, because he probably would lose his job. 55 years old. And he's talking about the current situation on... He's flown both international and domestic flights. And he's talking about the current pilot shortage that's going on, which will directly affect you if you're going to be traveling, because the likelihood of, you know, a flight being delayed or bad weather or pilot shortages, those are real things right now. So in the wake of some of the stories that have been taking place in recent weeks, he says, it's midnight and I've just finished a transcontinental flight to New York. I'm due back in the air at 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, part of a recent increase in my hours. I used to get 15 days off a month minimum for most of my career. Now I get only 10 days off, and it's taking a toll. For the month of June, I was scheduled to have only 6 days off. I'm tired. Flying is definitely not as fun as it used to be. Being a pilot, he says, was once the best part-time job in the world because you only worked 15 days a month and no more. The pressure is real. There's pressure to fly when you're tired. I have to check a box that says I'm fit to fly at the start of every flight. 30 minutes later, that could change. But when I check the box, everything that's legal comes on my shoulders. The company becomes exempt from how I perform from that point on. There are a lot of issues the public isn't aware of that have come into play in recent years, and you're seeing some of the results right now. There are some serious problems that could affect safety. First, there's a lot less initial training and less frequency in the training of active pilots. We used to get training every 6 months. Then it got pushed to every 9 months, and now it's training only once a year. And when they do training, they compress stuff just to check off the legal boxes. There are instances, he says, when they fudge the schedules on flight plans to allow pilots to fly trips that they otherwise couldn't legally be allowed to fly. Typically, this happens at the end of the day when the crews are the most tired. As long as nothing goes wrong, nobody will find out. But that's why I keep a copy of every flight plan of mine, because if there's an incident, it would be scrutinized and they'd see there were actually two flight plans that were made on some trips. They call it a revision. But in some cases, it's to get around flight time and duty time requirements. I'm going to pause there for a second. When he talks about duty time requirements, what he's referring to is that the pilots are legally required to get a certain amount of sleep. They have to have a certain amount of rest, certain amount of hours in between one flight and another. And I've been in the receiving end of this before when, let's say, my connecting flight, where I've got to get to where I've got to go, and my connecting flight is delayed by a couple of hours because the pilots got in late on the flight that got them there. They didn't get enough rest, so they've got to rest longer. That's what he's referring to here. He says, so a lot of times we pilots just have to push it even just to get home. The pressure can also make you angry or anxious. And humans make mistakes under this kind of pressure, whether that ultimately results in lives being lost or damage being done to an aircraft. Some of the people who were furloughed at the start of the pandemic had to be retrained, or if they were gone too long, they either didn't come back or didn't want to come back. A lot of the senior people didn't leave because they were getting $500,000 in PPE to sit at home. A lot of the new airline management people have MBAs, but they don't know the airlines that well, and a lot of them are woke, which doesn't help anything. Neither did the mask or vaccine mandates, he says. The majority of people in my company didn't want to be vaccinated. We didn't have to wear masks in the cockpit. I wouldn't have been able to do my job with a mask on. I told my flight attendants not to escalate with the mask situation in the cabin. Some of the flight attendants can get like little Nazis and go after someone with their mask below their nose. I said, don't. They became proxy enforcers for the government, but with no training to de-escalate. I told them, call ahead and we can get law enforcement to deal with them on the ground. Don't escalate it on the plane. Flying when I started out in the 90s used to be pretty nice. Then it became a race to the bottom. The airlines began just trying to sell fares and get customers however they could do so, and everyone started buying tickets off Expedia. It was all about getting customers. The margins got so thin, I started calling it the Walmart model. It took a lot of the fun and comfort out of flying for everyone, a lot of the prestige lost too. Then came September 11th. I watched the South Tower drop down from the tarmac at LaGuardia. I thought there was going to be martial law. It was a dark day for the airlines. I knew some of the people who were lost. And after that machine took over, the whole military-industrial complex, and it affected everything. Nothing was ever really the same. In the early days after 9/11, I made sure my crash axe was right there where I could grab it in the cockpit and not strapped to the wall in case anyone rushed the cockpit. They went a little slow on hiring new pilots after 9/11. They were trying to see what was going to happen. There weren't a lot of customers. Even during the Obama administration, there was some wait and see. But when Trump got in office, everything was looking good for everyone. It was like the sky was the limit. There was no looking back. And then COVID hit, and the furloughs came with it. Now we've got Biden, who's never had a real job. He's never had to solve real problems at a real job. And everyone else in Washington does is make problems to keep themselves in business. He says, back in the day, we could get friends and family free or discounted tickets. But now I tell my relatives, you're better off going online and paying because you'll get better seats than I can get you. The only advantage I have flying as a passenger now is that I can take one of the jump seats. I prefer that to being packed in with the passengers. He says, don't get me wrong. I'm blessed to be here. I'm at the top of my game. I'm at the pinnacle. I've done hard work, and I'm up here at 37,000 feet living the dream I had as a kid. When I started in 1992, I was paid $14.25 an hour. Now my base pay is $240,000, not including overtime. He says, I know people are worried about flying this summer, but I'd never tell anyone not to fly. Flying is still safer than driving, but there's still plenty of pilots like me with a lot of experience who know what they're doing. Pilots operate with a sense of mission. They want to get those passengers to their destination. He says, I'm a pressure player. I'm normally pretty relaxed, but when the guacamole hits the fan, I kick into gear and get to work. I perform best under pressure. A lot of pilots my age do. Okay. That's good. But Cyrus, if you had to choose to be on a flight where the pilot is under pressure versus a flight where the pilot is not under pressure, which flight would you want to get on?
That's an easy answer. I'm still wrapping my head around. Did you say $240,000 a year?
Yeah, but he's been doing this now for 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
well, of course, I want a relaxed pilot that he's just putting in his one, you know, if it's a long flight, this is his one job for the day.
Right.
Lots of rest on both ends.
Yeah, but that's the part that I found particularly noteworthy is that, especially where they're being pushed to fly when they're tired. And that one line, this is when human beings make mistakes. You know,
sure
we don't
is.
Want mistakes at 37,000 feet. Unless they give you chicken instead of steak. But of course, they don't serve meals much anymore. So they're not likely to make that one. So anyway, I just want you to be aware of it. It's for your Good to Know file. It's on the show Twitter feed if you want to read it. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Thomas now in La Crosse. Good morning, Thomas.
Hola, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, sir.
I wanted to call, and I caught the last part of your discussion. I had something else I wanted to share about my appreciation for your radio program and guru and everybody else.
Well, thank you.
I'm 74, had an extraordinary life. I'm a former Vietnam veteran in combat, actual combat. I have miracles, blessings that happened even in that situation. And now that you're talking about an airline pilot, that I'm also a retired captain. I worked out at what they call.
So get to the. Give me the cash value, Thomas. This sounds good. What's the cash value on this?
I call to thank you guys because I'm a little boy in the Mormon church, and then I got involved after the war and got went into that early Jesus movement in evangelical and charismatic churches. And it was good at the time, but later on, after I relocated and so forth, I started going to RCIA when I was about 43, 44. And it was something that really encouraged people to go through, whether they are creative Catholics or anything else, because the older you get, you develop your critical thinking and life experiences, and it helps us to really, really identify the value of the Catholic faith, the Eucharist, and all the other ordinances and sacraments that they have.
Hey, Thomas, I apologize. We're running out of time. I'm afraid I've got to take a break. But well, has Relevant Radio been good to you? Has Relevant Radio helped you?
It has helped me because I have so many health conditions.
We're going to pray for you, Thomas. Thank you. I appreciate your time very much. Thank you. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Pew Research just released some findings. It's a poll of U.S. adults, and they say that 60% of U.S. adults say that whether a person is a man or a woman is determined by their sex assigned at birth, while 38% say a person's gender can be different from sex assigned at birth. My reaction to that is, who cares? Because when it comes to science and reality, opinion polls are irrelevant.
All people can come up with statistics to prove anything. 40% of all people know that.
Your voice is changing, Cyrus.
Sorry.
So if you want to see this poll, you'll see it on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. But my reaction to it is, you know, that's interesting. Okay. But it doesn't affect anything. It doesn't affect science. It doesn't affect reality. What 40% or 38% of people's opinion may be on this issue. And one more thing, too. You're not assigned your sex at birth. Your sex is recognized. Oh, you have a boy. Oh, you have a girl. It's not assigned to you. It's recognized. So this whole notion, this whole language and thought category of your sex being assigned to you is simply false. So don't fall for it. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Maria in Copley, Ohio. Where in Ohio is Copley, Maria?
It's right near Akron, actually.
Ah, got it. Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Patrick. I was hoping for some guidance and advice on, or your opinion on, a pro-life Catholic person who is just finding out that they're employed by a company who is going to support abortion and provide compensation for travel to receive an abortion.
Mm-hmm. So was that the end of the thought there? So what do you think about that person who works for a company and the company supports
abortion?
We've
been boycotting all these companies that are, you know, coming out and saying that they're supporting abortion. We've been trying not to support them. And now we're finding out that my husband, you know, company and that he works for in our livelihood is one of those companies. So it's like,
okay.
I don't know.
I get it now. Okay. Well, yeah. So is the company asking your husband to compromise his morals by having him do something directly that would contribute to that? Or is he just part of the bigger machine?
He's just part of the bigger machine. They're making changes to their healthcare statement to include this now.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, certainly from a moral standpoint, he's not involved in that evil decision, and so he doesn't share the culpability. He can't help but being part of a bigger company that has turned in that direction. So he's not doing anything wrong if he's working his job, and it just so happens that the company is socially irresponsible. But if it's possible, and this, I guess, goes to the question of what you're talking about, in terms of boycotting socially irresponsible companies, if it's possible for him to have gainful employment and to maintain the lifestyle that you're trying to have or that you have, and he can do that somewhere else where that's not the problem, then it's not like he's obliged to do that. But it seems like if he did do that, that would help you continue to boycott companies that are socially irresponsible. I don't know if it's possible for him to do that, but that's another option.
Right. And I feel like even if that was to be the case that he did seek different employment, I feel like so many of these big companies are coming out and saying this, who's to say that 2 months down the line, this new company that he starts working for won't come out with the same, I don't know.
No, it's true.
It's just very disappointing. And it feels almost shameful to be employed by such a company, but it really seems hard to avoid anymore.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. It's everywhere you turn. The banks, the credit cards, the grocery stores. I mean, if you shop at Kroger or one of the Kroger subsidiaries, which almost everybody in the country is either buying their ground beef at Kroger or a Kroger subsidiary because they're the biggest. Your life insurance, your car insurance, the batteries that you put in your remote control for your TV, the toothpaste that you, everything, all of it. It's just like everywhere
all the
you
live
turn.
Streaming too, Netflix, Amazon, Disney. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
You have
well,
to go.
I appreciate your take on that, and to just know that he's not like sinning by by keeping his job here, but.
No, I mean, if they said, okay, we want you to be the guy who writes the checks to Planned Parenthood and be the direct interface, I mean, that would be, I would say, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Sure.
But if he's, you know, if he's in charge of the division that's making widgets, he's not doing anything wrong.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Patrick.
You're welcome, Maria. Thank you. Nice to talk to you. 888-914-9149. Several emails I want to get to here. This one comes in from Michael, who's listening on the Relevant Radio app. He says, Patrick, I've been listening to you for about a month or so and found out you had a podcast after you appeared on Catholic Answers, which I did recently, by the way. I was on Catholic Answers, so it was nice to have a chance to revisit with my old friends there. So Michael says, as a guest, you hit the nail on the head when you talked about the dangers of social media and cell phones being like a stick of dynamite in a young person's hands. The enemy uses technology to cause division, chaos, and spread lies. His deception is everywhere. I believe social media is the talking snake of our day. Ooh, that's an interesting way to put it. And refuse to participate in any of it. Keep up the good work. Out of the 10 or so Catholic podcasts I listen to yours is the most entertaining and informative. God bless you and your team. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. I'm going to have to work extra hard now so that you can narrow it down from 10 podcasts to one, this one, or maybe a few others from Relevant Radio. But I'm glad you like the program, and I'm glad you wrote to me. Thank you. This is an email that comes in from Wausau, Wisconsin, 92.9 FM from Veronica. She sent this in saying, a relative replied to my pro-life post in regard to an unborn baby being a distinct person using Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16, saying that the Bible is all over the place on life, and Jesus said that life begins at the first breath. How do I respond to this? Well, I'll take a look at the Bible verse here, but first what I would say is you don't need to respond on the basis of religion or the Bible. I mean, it's sufficient to say that science shows us that life begins at conception, when the zygote is formed, when the sperm and the egg meet, when fertilization takes place. That is the beginning of life. Something is growing, something is nutrifying, something is, there's cell division taking place. It's alive. Well, the question is, well, what is that? It's not a tumor, obviously. It's something unique and separate from the woman's body. It's not part of her body, like, say, a tumor might be, or an organ, or something like that. That's part of her body. This is something that's in her body, but it's not from or part of her body. This is a separate being, a separate life. Some people are not willing to say that it's a human life yet. They set up all sorts of arbitrary thresholds. Well, it's not till there are brain waves, or it's not till you can detect a heartbeat, or it's not till this, it's not till that. It's purely arbitrary. It's part of the fallacy of begging the question. because it's simply pushing the issue back one step. It doesn't resolve it, because what is that that is growing, that is separate from the mother with its own unique DNA, etc.? Well, it's a human life. So if I were you, I would just simply stick to the science and argue on that basis. Now, the Bible verse, that the one I think that you're referring to, Psalm 139, For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. So this language, of course, that we read here is not intended to be understood as like a scientific treatise. It's not a medical explanation either of conception or of gestation. It's a poetic way of describing the beauty of what God does when he brings human life into existence. And what's interesting is that verse 13 and verse 14 refer to the actual, you might say, reality of the person who is developing in the womb, talking about forming my inward parts, knitting me together. They didn't have any concept whatsoever of medical science and all the things that play into the science of human gestation. They knew, of course, that from time to time they might see, in the case of a woman who died and maybe miscarried a child at some early stage of development, they could see, okay, well, this doesn't look like a fully developed baby, but they didn't have any way of really determining much more than it just doesn't look the same. But you'll notice that in those first two verses, it's referring to that process of gestation without really describing it. It's just remarking about it. And then in the fourth verse, verse 16, it seems to be talking there about how you, before you even were conceived in your mother's womb, before you came into physical existence, from all eternity, as it talks about, in your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them, meaning that you hadn't started to exist yet. And yet you were an idea in God's mind from all eternity. That to me is so mind-blowing, that you and I and Cyrus and everybody else you can think about, all of human beings in all eras of human history, before any of us began to exist, the idea of you was in God's mind from all eternity. So there was never not an idea of you. Isn't that an amazing thing to think about? Which really gives a lot of extra credence to what Jesus says in John 3, for God so loved the world. He loves you so much. He was thinking about you from all eternity, and he's created you. So personally, you know, what I would do is I would just deconstruct or dismantle this attempt to use Psalm 136 as if it somehow disproved something with regard to when life begins. It seems like it's easier to stick with science and just point that out and just take your stand on that. Life begins at conception. And for that matter, that means that that innocent life should be free from aggression, free from the danger of being killed, because no one has the right to take the life of an innocent person. To me, it just seems extremely simple. And if you can keep it simple, it seems like it would be an easier way to get your point across. Thank you. Let's go to Pino in Berwyn, Illinois. Hello, Pino.
Cheap for about $20. You get.
Hey, Pino's not ready. We'll come back to Pino. Let's go to Miriam in Scottsdale, Arizona. Good morning, Miriam.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. My husband has a son. He's my stepson. He fathered a child 12 years ago. And the child is reaching out to my husband, wants to have a relationship. She's 12 years old now.
Okay.
And we've reached out to the son to see if he's acceptable to that. He wants no part of the child, has no feelings for the child.
Can you pause for a second? Who fathered the child? Did you say it was your husband, or maybe you're saying it's your son?
My stepson.
Your stepson, okay.
His son. I mean, yeah.
Okay. So your stepson fathered an illegitimate child who's now 12.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. And so now she's reaching out to my husband, her grandfather, to have a relationship, and we feel torn because he doesn't want us to really get involved, but he's not opposed to it, and there's legal implications because if the mother wants to go after him, for, he's never given the child support, which I think is wrong. But morally, we're torn because half of our friends are saying, don't get involved. But I grew up without a father, and I know at that age, 12, you want to know your father. You want to have a relationship because what happens with the child feels unworthy of love because, oh, my father's rejecting me. So, you know, I almost cry because, you know.
Yeah. It is a sad situation, no doubt. Well, I mean, every child has a right to know his parents. Not every child gets to know his or her parents. That's sometimes one of the grim realities of life. But if there's a possibility for this child to know her father, there's that seems to me that that's a good goal that's worthy to pursue. Now, in the in whatever the legalities are that surround this, did your stepson sign away his parental rights? Did he do anything that would dissociate him legally from this child?
No, I don't know if... I know that on the birth certificate, his surname is on there, but I don't know that he signed the birth certificate.
Okay. And so the concern on the part of some is that if he makes any movement to allow this child to have a relationship with him, that suddenly he'll get on the hook financially for child support. Is that right?
Yes, yes, okay. Which I think is sinful to begin with. He has a responsibility.
Indeed. That was my thought, you know, that it's time that he man up, as they say, and do what's right by this child, not only from the standpoint of being available to her as her father, in whatever form that will take, who knows how much time he'd be able to be allowed to visit with her, but she has a right to it. And then also, he has an obligation to provide for this child. And if he's shirking that obligation, then maybe this is the lever that's needed to oust him from his lethargy so that he'll start doing what's right about this.
Yes. We've even suggested he go to counseling to try to open his heart about the whole situation.
Yeah.
But he just wants to erase the whole thing.
Well, you can't force him, obviously. You can't make him do something that he's obstinate and unwilling to do. There's an old saying, Miriam, you can, and I know you know this saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But you can put salt in his oats to make him thirsty so he'll want to drink. So maybe there's a way that you can help his heart get softened by maybe, you know, talking him into, well, what about just meeting with her? Let's just go to the park and, you know, and just meet her, just say hello. That could be the start of a thawing process. You never know.
Well, thank you, Patrick. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, I know it's sad.
God bless.
Thank you. Yeah, it's sad. Life can be filled with many sad things, but this is where God's grace and restoration come in so importantly, because no matter how bad things seem, it can always get better if you let God in on the situation. So maybe that's what needs to happen. Let's go to Arthur now in L.A., California. Good morning, Arthur.
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Yes.
I've been listening to your program for about maybe 2 months now, and I haven't heard you mention E. Michael Jones. I'm not a Catholic, but he's a tremendous... He's a tremendous thinker. He's a tremendous orator. And he's really influenced me on my thinking of American politics, of Western civilization, of the Bible, of Jesus Christ, of the forces that are anti to Jesus Christ and how they drive so much of our culture today. What are your thoughts?
Well, I met E. Michael Jones in person, spent a little time with him back in, I guess it would have been the late 80s or the early 90s, maybe around the year 1990. So I had that to go on, and I haven't really read much of his work. I read a book that he wrote on Medjugorje in the late 80s or mid-80s, I guess it was. And I'm aware that he's written a number of other books, but I haven't really read them. And at best, I simply know of him as sort of someone who has, rightly or wrongly, become controversial in certain areas. Some people accuse him of anti-Semitism. I think he, from what I have seen or what I've heard anyway, he rejects those arguments. And everyone has a right to have his own good name. So I don't begrudge anyone the right to defend himself from accusations. That's one accusation I've heard. But there are a million and one people that you haven't heard me talk about on this program, only because typically it's not pertinent to what we're talking about on the program. And then also, if you're wondering why I don't talk about him, it's just because I'm largely unfamiliar with his work. I mean, I'm aware of it, and I know who he is, but I don't follow his work. I don't follow his lectures or anything. So it wouldn't really be fair for me, especially if there was some criticism, it wouldn't be fair for me to be saying something on the air if I didn't really have much to go on. So that's true. Oh, isn't that interesting? He just hung up. All right. Well, maybe he wasn't interested in an answer. I don't know. Well, these things happen. 888-914-9149. While we're waiting for this break, well, we don't have time to do that either. I was going to read a quick email, but we'll come back to that on the other side of this. Actually, I can do this one quickly. This one comes in from Ann, listening in Eustis, Florida on 90.3 FM. She says, I listened to your program today, and you read an article about abortion myths after the end of Roe versus Wade. I forgot how to get a hold of the article. Please let me know, as I was impressed with the info, and I'd like to pass it on to my Right to Life ministry. Easily done. So, Ann, just go to the show Twitter feed, at P Madrid Show. You'll see it there. You can click the link and access the article, or go to the show page. Go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you'll see the Twitter feed embedded on the lower right. Click on that, and you can access it there as well. Thank you. I'm coming back with Hour 3. I can't believe it's Hour 3 already, but I'll be back with that right after this quick timeout and some tips on how to push pride away in your own life.
Full stop.